The Senate Veterans Affairs Committee will consider the nomination of Robert McDonald as the next VA secretary tomorrow. If the Senate confirms him, he'll inherit a Veterans Health Administration that hasn't had a major review of its healthcare system since the mid-1980s. The Military Officers Association of America is looking at that issue. Vice Admiral Norb Ryan is president of MOA, U.S. Navy retired. Norb wants and MOA want Congress and the White House to build a commission focused on reforming the VHA. Norb, it's always great to have you on the program. Thanks for coming back today. What would you like this commission to look like? Who would you like to see on it? And what would you like to see them examine in particular about the VHA, Norb?
Well, Francis, thanks for having me on. We think this ought to be a high-level commission. It ought to be independent. It ought to be bipartisan. It's the perfect thing that Mr. McDonald, if he's confirmed, once he gets his feet on the ground and gets his bearings, it's a type of commission that could report out with how to deliver healthcare more efficiently and effectively in the 21st century. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I'm pleased that they're going to have Mr. McDonald's confirmation hearing. We've talked to the White House staff a couple times on this issue. I've shared this idea with Jeff Miller, the House Veterans Affairs Committee chairman. He has some thoughts about a commission as well. And Bernie Sanders has also received it. I've also sent an email to Sloan Gibson, the acting secretary, and without going against confidences, he was positive about it as well. So I think it ought to have people on there, Francis, like maybe the director of the Cleveland Clinic, the director of Geisinger Medical Center, people that are used to running big hospitals with a lot of outreach. I think it ought to have some key former members of the Congress on there that know some of the issues, like Senator Bill Frist from Tennessee, the former majority leader. I like Representative Chet Edwards, a representative who had a lot to do with getting additional funding for the VA in the past. And then some of the key VSO leaders and some of the folks that use the VA, people perhaps that have been in the VA system for a short period, like Lieutenant General Jim Peake, former Surgeon General of the Army. That's the type of caliber of person, Francis, I think it'll take to have the vision, to know what the world-class healthcare delivery is about in a public-private type of venture.
It strikes me that the mix of people that should be involved in a commission like this, if it were to come about, would be tremendously delicate at the same time as tremendously important, Norb, because you're not just choosing healthcare experts. You mentioned some of the kinds of folks that you would like to see included at the beginning of that list. But the provision of care to vets is very different than the provision of care to the general public, especially in the last 5 to 10 years, based on what we've seen from the vets that are coming home from war. So it strikes me that that's a very precarious balance to strike by whoever it is that helps to choose who goes on a commission like this.
That's a good point, Francis, and certainly the VA's got to be in charge of every veteran's health care. But we do think that money is not the only answer to this thing, that there's a more effective and efficient way of delivering quality health care. And Rob Neighbors' report cries out for that. That's why I sent a second letter to the president, where his finding is that the Veterans Health Administration needs to be restructured and reformed. Wow. And that the VHA needs to be better plan and invest now for anticipated changes in demographics and veterans. I mean, we know a lot more females are coming in, a surge in mental health needs, an increase in special needs of younger veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan, and specific needs associated with a growing number of older veterans. So all of these things cry out for a holistic, independent look at what we can do to really improve the VHA.
I want to be very clear, Norb, that the point of this next question is not to affix blame or point fingers at any particular person before I ask it, because I've asked it to other folks, and that's been kind of a response that I've gotten back. But it strikes me that when the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan began, and I talked to people inside the Defense Department's healthcare system, especially people dealing with men and women at the very front lines, they were very proud of the fact, and they should have been proud of the fact, that men and women who in previous conflicts would have been lost were being saved. But that means that they come home and they enter eventually the Veterans Health Administration, the Veterans Healthcare System. And it strikes me that I don't know of anybody who was thinking about that end of it when all of these folks were going out to the battlefield in the first place. Am I off track there, or is this just something that we've kind of missed the ball on?
Well, I think we've been playing catch-up, Francis, because of the sheer volume of increase in folks coming into the VA and the severity of the injuries. I mean, we're playing catch-up on supporting the caregivers, too. For, as you mentioned, many of these young men and women, these brave young men and women, are going to need care for their life. And we see that as I visit the different polytrauma centers. I was just down in Tampa and then out at Palo Alto. We've got to think of this holistically, and this commission can help us think about what else we need to do. No nation does more for its wounded and its veterans and its military than our nation, but we can and must do better, Francis, and the Neighbors report highlighted that.
Vice Admiral Norb Bryan, U.S. Navy retired, is the president of the Military Officers Association of America, and that's why I ask that question, Norb, because in MOA's recommendations, you write, the VHA needs to better plan and invest now for anticipated changes in demographics of the veterans. And that doesn't necessarily just include the veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan. We look around the world today and we see some terrible things going on in terrible places. And no doubt 5, 10, 15 years from now, developments will mandate that the United States is involved on some level, probably, whether we like it or not. That's just what history has demonstrated to us. And so anticipating all of these things as they present themselves, figuring out what the end game looks like, seems to me to be an important priority of whatever reform effort happens next, whether it's a commission like you're proposing or something else.
That's a good point. There are a lot of best practices out there, and we have to get an eclectic group together that will give the leadership some good ideas of how we should chart our course.
Another issue that I have talked to you about before and that I know you're paying attention to, Norb, is the Military Compensation and Retirement Modernization Commission. Their interim report is out right before Independence Day. And your reaction to that, to the work that they're doing? My sense, if I recall our conversations correctly, is that you were apprehensive, not negative, but apprehensive about what this commission was going to look at and what they might find.
Well, Francis, I'm somewhat encouraged by this interim report. As you know, it talked more about the process that they're undergoing and some of the things that they've discovered. And I think the thing that pleases me most is that they agree with the Military Officers Association that personnel costs were one-third of the budget in the 1980s, and they're still one-third of the budget. It doesn't mean that there doesn't need to be some modernization of perhaps benefits, but it has put a stake in the heart of the spin earlier, at least a year ago, by the Pentagon that the personnel costs were growing out of proportion and they would take up 50, 60, 70%. That was debunked by the commission. The other thing that I was pleased that the commission talked about, they agreed with MOA that DOD leaders' claims of significant cost growth since 2000 ignores the 2000 compensation levels are a dubious standard. That's when the all volunteer force was struggling with retention and recruiting. So, again, we've been trying to get that point across that that's not the time frame that you ought to use as a reference point. And all the think tanks tend to still do that, use 2000 as a point to take off from. And the other thing that I think their commission's going to find is that the personnel growth stopped in 2011. It was almost 8% a year until 2011, and now it's a negative 1.5%. So the Pentagon has got to get its facts right, and I hope that the Senate will pay attention to this report, because the last thing we need to do is make some ill-advised proposals without waiting for this commission that's going to take a holistic look at everything and see what the overall impact will be to retention and recruiting. The risks are pretty high right now, Francis, with the op-tempo and the pers tempo. The Navy's going on 8.5-month deployments when the standard was 6. With the troops coming down, the last thing we need to do is send them the wrong signal.
Well, and you make a good point there about the lengths of the deployments, Norb, and the concern that I'm starting to hear from folks in the military advocacy community is that with the shrink of all of the branches, there's no shrink in mission. Regardless of what some of the policy documents like the QDR say and so on, nobody really wants to be the one to say we're not going to do that anymore.
Exactly. And, you know, the chiefs and the secretary, they have an impossible mission right now with sequester looming over their heads, Francis. We have got to do something to better balance the savings. Defense can save money, but they can't go back to the full sequester of $50 billion a year. We've got to give them an easier ramp downward if we're going to balance the force, and that means people and readiness and systems and stations. That we employ these people at. We've got to get give them a chance to ramp this at a modest pace, and we can't do it with a full sequester coming back in 2016. So the Congress has also got to step up to the plate and work with the administration on this.
All right, just a minute or so left, Norb. Rob Whitman, who is obviously a very key player in defense budget issues in the House, said the end of last week that he really is desperate's not the right word, but he's very adamant about bringing his Republican colleagues in the House along to some kind of deal that will kill the sequester, at least for the Defense Department. Is that a good sign in your view? Is that a big deal?
Well, a lot of people have been talking up there, but there hasn't been enough action, Francis. You know, the Balanced Budget Act made some progress in that area. And so what we've got to do is we've got to get the parties talking to one another in a very serious nature. And perhaps at the end of the fall elections here, there'll be a brief window before the presidential campaign starts where they can make a modest proposal at least. A lot of people that have been around town are not optimistic about a big deal, but maybe we can do something similar to the Balanced Budget Act